Brilliant novels, groundbreaking nonfiction, evocative poetry, great books, and insightful conversations whenever you want them on the Talk of Iowa Book Club podcast. Pick the books that speak to you or read them all. Subscribe now wherever you get your podcasts. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Spring is in the air and in the forecast, but it was so cold for so long in February that Iowa homeowners are still dealing with damage. This hour, our home improvement expert Bill McAnally will help us assess and plan for repairs and also plan for the future so we don't have to do this next time. And he is on the line with me. Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Charity.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. And we did have historic cold temperatures in February. We are prepared for these kinds of things. We don't have the kind of damage that, of course, a lot of people experienced in Texas and Mississippi with this cold. But when it's that cold for that long, things just happen, right?
Yeah, they really do. You know, we think we're prepared for this kind of stuff, but we're never really prepared for those, you know, really long blasts like we had. You know, maybe one or two nights it'll be below zero or something. But, you know, gee whiz, it was just so cold for so long and so many things happen inside your house that you don't see most of the time. And when you do see them, it's the ones you really don't want to see. The damages that, you know, they're luckily, you know, we didn't see a whole lot of, you know, catastrophic photos of, you know, burst pipes and ceilings coming down here in Iowa, because we actually build to our climate and they don't down there. It's driven because of, you know, just the patterns. I mean, how would they possibly expect something as brutal
right.
as they had? And,
right.
you know, and the design of houses and even the codes down there don't require it. So, you know, it was a complete surprise. And maybe, you know, we should start looking just maybe a little bit more into, you know, the changes of the weather patterns and trying to accommodate them with our building methods.
Well, yes, let's talk about some of the things that can happen, even if we think we have some decent insulation. I mean, when it's that cold for that long, of course, a lot of pipes run along the outside of our houses. So I know that my Facebook feed lit up with people talking about frozen pipes. It's just something that tends to happen. And when your pipes freeze, when you turn on that tap and the water doesn't come out, what's the first thing that you should do?
Well, you know, all these topics right here are, these things can just get into huge arguments with, you know, we should have done this, we should have done that. And so if somebody gets upset with me, remember, my mom is listening and my daughter's listening. They're both of them probably. And so don't say anything mad about what we're going to talk
right.
about.
Be kind to Bill.
Feelings.
He's entitled to his
Bill
feelings.
Day. Yeah. Well, you know what we used to do, and it was in my wife's grandma's house, when her pipes froze, I had to crawl down in the crawl space and push away the cobwebs and the possums crawling around under there, you know, and in that time I used to take a torch down, which is the dumbest thing in the world to do, and try to heat the frozen pipes, you know, with a torch, which, when you think about it, okay, wood structure, a torch, that's not the brightest thing. So, you know, what we used to do then is take a heat gun, sometimes even a hair dryer, but they sell heat guns that get real warm, but not to the point of causing a flame. And, you know, the thing is with that is it depends on every house is built different. So we have some of these old, you know, steel pipes. We have some of the copper piping, some of the plastic piping, and every one of them, you know, takes cold differently. So sometimes it'll split. Some of the pipes will split, and until you thaw them out or get warm air to them, they're going to stay frozen. And, you know, you can turn the water on and you don't get anything. And if that should make you a little bit nervous. So you're just going to have to go and try to find sometimes where that is frozen. And sometimes it's in a crawl space, but sometimes it's in outside walls, which they don't allow you to do anymore. They don't allow you to put water lines in an outside wall anymore.
Well, a lot of us live in houses that were built long before that rule was made.
Yeah, and that's the problem is, you know, you try to warm it. So sometimes you can, even when we get this warm weather, you know, sometimes there was enough heat loss in the walls to kind of keep the pipes from actually, you know, bursting. But if you're gonna turn that water on, you know, and you don't get any, you're gonna have to try and heat it. Some people put electric, you know, tapes, pipe tapes on them and plug them in to warm it up gently. But you'd better have somebody at the ready. You have to know where that water shutoff is for your house, because all of a sudden, if you do start getting some water, you need to stop it right away. And so,
right,
because
you could just have terrible. It's not so much the pipes freezing; it's the water damage.
No, that's it. You know, and just a little bit of water inside of a wall. You know, you're going to ruin the drywall. You can ruin the wood. You can rot things out. But the biggest thing is you rot. You know, inside the walls, you might have a ceiling come down like we saw in Texas. But when you wet something, you know, you're looking at all this, you know, you hate to bring up mold all the time, but that's what happens with a lot of our building materials. So even let's say we're thinking we're going into spring. And if you haven't located your water shut off, do it right away now in case we get another cold spell. Because now is when we're seeing a lot of the issues. It was when it started warming up, you know, those first warm days. Maybe some of the people listening have seen water stains on their ceilings now, and it's because there's so much frost in your attic. Now it's melting, coming down, goes through your insulation, it comes out your ceiling or comes out your lights and that. But yeah, you know, and a lot of times it's good to call a plumber on those cases where your water is frozen, because they can quick patch it while they're there. And they have ways in many cases to thaw it out that are much better than someone crawling around and trying to fix it themselves. And so, you know, if it occurs all the time, call a contractor in and get it fixed so it doesn't happen the next time we get a cold spell. And the older the house is, it's, you know, you would think we would have learned over the years, but in many cases, you know, we'll crawl around in attics now of houses built in the last 5 years, and you're amazed that something didn't freeze and cause, you know, some real problems.
So planning for the future, if this is something that's happened to you and, you know, you've taken care of the pipes and the water damage, what do you do? What do you need to do to prevent it from happening next time? Because you can't just move your pipes away from that wall. That's a major undertaking.
Yeah, it is. And what some people have done is they'll just open, and you know, luckily most of the piping is like, say, to a kitchen sink. There, you know, most of them now on new homes, they'll bring them up to the floor instead of out the wall. And so just move the pipes to inside the cabinet, and it'll usually stay warm unless your walls are real bad. And if they're still freezing inside your cabinets, open the cabinet doors up to let warm air go in and warm the cabinets up. In some cases, you know, if you can access where the pipes are, take a look if someone has been working in your home at one time and maybe pulled the insulation out of where the plumbing pipes were to work on them and didn't put it back. I've surprisingly run into that, and then people's pipes freeze because some goofball pulled the insulation out of the wall.
We actually had a problem this year with pipes freezing because a kitten pulled the insulation out of the wall. So it's not it's not always a human perpetrator.
Yeah. That's true, you know, and you know, you hate to say it, you know, when you're out in the country and you're out in the woods, you know, you have the possibility more mice, and mice will get into the insulation and they kind of compact it and pull it down. The same thing. So you can also ask some friends people can go together. And there are some infrared cameras, not the infrared app that you put on your phone that's kind of phony, but you buy the small infrared camera. They cost about $250 now. You hook it onto your phone, and you can scan all of your walls and see, you know, where there might be some insulation missing, and you might see those pipes in the wall that you didn't think were there. So the best thing to do is, you know, when you balance moving pipes inside the wall as opposed to repairing the wall later, I would suggest, you know, get a plumber, move them in where it's warm. And because very seldom are pipes now out in the open anyway, they're always coming into a cabinet or underneath a vanity.
Well,
so get that. And the other problem is too, is is we have, you know, finished off basements and then, you know, like say a drywall ceiling. And if the, they call it the band joists, where the floor joists sit on top of your foundation wall, if that wasn't air sealed before it drywalled, cold air comes rushing in and it'll freeze pipes in a few feet inside of a ceiling in your basement because of air leakage. And so there's another, you know, I would see, you know, I would, in a perfect world, I'd like to see maybe four or five people go together and buy an infrared camera and they can spot these things and easily air seal those so we could stop, you know, the cold air from getting in.
Well, and I know you've had a great deal of fun playing with your infrared camera, so you can be the cool person in the neighborhood, too, and check it out for all of your neighbors and your friends. We also, we just have about a minute and a half here before the break, Bill, but the extreme cold in February pointed out some other things on our homes. A lot of people had ice dams and things like that forming with all of that ice and all of the freeze and thaw cycle that we have going on. What are some other things that we should be looking at on our homes right now, now that everything or almost everything is melted?
Well, the thing is hopefully when it was really cold, a lot of people looked up in their attic to see if there was frost. I'm right in the middle of a project with a friend and a past student of mine where they're going to have to pull all the roof sheeting off of the house because it got so saturated over a period of years from warm air going up into the attic. And that's our real cause of ice damming. And I can, you know, get more into depth on that in a little bit.
Okay. So we need to keep our eyes open and look around and understand these trouble spots. Of course, you are welcome to call and ask Bill your specific questions about your home. And it doesn't have to be ice or cold damage. Anything that's on your home improvement list, your repair list. I'm hearing George there in the background, Bill. It's nice to hear his voice. I miss having him visit in the studio, too. All right.
Well, he can make noise when he's laying on his side, too. He doesn't have to be standing up. He's pretty talented.
Oh, he's a good boy. All right, we are going to take a short break. You can call us 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Our home improvement expert Bill McAnally here with us today. This is Talk of Iowa.
In a time like none of us have experienced before, there's strength to be found in community institutions like Iowa Public Radio. I'm Executive Director Myrna Johnson, and I'm so proud of the thoughtful, informed coverage IPR brings you on the issues that matter. Listener funding is the power source that makes it all possible. Facts, understanding, insight, that's what you fund when you give to this station. Make your gift now at iowapublicradio.org, and thank you.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, our home improvement expert. Bill McAnally is here with us today, here to answer your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We've been talking about cold damage to your home, but of course you can ask questions about any of the things on your home improvement to-do list. And Steve is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Steve.
Yes, hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yeah, so I've got a relatively new house, 7 years old, and my great room has been getting water spots in the ceiling. And come to find out, I get condensation in my attic. It gets the blown-in insulation wet and eventually creates water spots in the ceiling. What's your thoughts on spraying the entire backside of the drywall with closed cell foam?
Well, I'm glad you that question is exactly where I kind of wanted to go today. Ever since right around 2014, the energy code was mandated in the state of Iowa, and which meant that especially in your area, you know, the houses had to be airtight or as close to be as possible, and then inside air controlled by ventilation. But what that meant was that we know that 90% of the building and material failures are in homes are due to moisture. And so when the ceiling of your home was not air sealed, It's letting moisture, warm air through, they call it stack effect. Cold air will sneak in around the house in the basement and goes into lower levels, and warm air rises. And when warm air, not heat, but when warm air rises and goes through, like all your light fixtures, if they haven't been sealed, all the wires that go through all of your plates haven't been sealed, and where maybe some fans, like bath fans or range hoods, are ducted into the attic, all that warm, moist air goes into your attic, and then it'll condense on the cool roof. Which it's really weird, you know, because you have all this air leakage, and it's taking warm air up, and it goes right through. I don't care if you have 2 feet of insulation up in the attic, that warm air carries the moisture up, and since the ceiling's insulated, then the roof, the underside of your roof, is cooler. And so that warm air condenses there, causes all that frost, and then when it melts, then it comes down, and you're seeing all that damage. That's probably one of our biggest ones in Iowa. We see all these spots. Now, I would find out, you know, who built the house, and then maybe ask the city, go to the inspection department. Cedar Falls has great inspectors over there. And then find out, you know, were we under the code, and were we following it, and why wasn't this air sealed? The easiest way, what we've been recommending on past projects that I've worked on before is if the insulation's wet, then remove it. And then you seal all of the penetrations up in your attic. And if your house, you know, like has truss rafters in it, sometimes, you know, it sounds like we can just spray foam over the top of the drywall to air seal. And initially I thought that'd be great, but we've had people call up and say, you know, in Iowa, our wood moves in the winter. And so the closed cell foam lost its seal to the wood because the wood moved. And so then we didn't have the air, you know, sealing properties. And so what most are doing now is either caulking all of the holes, which should have been done when the house was built, all the holes where wires come up, make sure that all the bath vents and range hoods and everything are vented outside, like through the roof or out through the end of a roof. And if they go into the overhang of your soffit, make sure that the soffit area is closed off so air can't come back up about 7 feet each way, 6 or 7 feet each way from where that comes out of the overhang. Mm-hmm. Because when the fan turns on, warm air goes out, and it goes out of the overhang, and then the attic is vented, and it just sucks it right back up. And in many cases, when I've been into attics like that, those are the worst areas of moisture and condensation. You know, I've seen it almost an inch thick on the bottom of the roof. Mm-hmm. Where the vents are, and that usually takes out the roof sheeting as well. So we've used caulking. I really like Mastic. It's a product they put on ductwork to seal ductwork because it comes in half-gallon plastic jugs. You can brush it on with a steep brush and seal around everything. And if you have can lights, you know, there's special products that go over the can light. So what I would do is go to buildingscience.com, and buildingscience.com is free. It's the most information area you can get for buildings, and just do ceiling attics. And that by far works the best. And don't let anybody talk you into throwing more insulation on top of what's there before you air seal, because it'll just make the matters even worse. And I did that a long time ago. I didn't understand the science behind it. So pull that wet insulation out if it's wet, and seal where the drywall joints are as well. And but I would go to buildingscience.com and look at there, and they'll tell you exactly how to do it. But any house built within the, you know, last few years should not be having this issue, because every new house is required to have that attic sealed around every light, every penetration, everything. Even if they're out in the country, they're required by state.
All right, Steve, good luck with that. And that's information I think we can all use, Bill. That's great. Let's get to this question from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. She says, we have a small treated wood deck with railing in front of our house. We bought the house in 2016, and it appeared at the time to have been recently built and treated. We've done nothing to the wood so far, and it's beginning to show some wear. Ordinarily, I'd just find some surface treatment and follow the manufacturer's directions, but we've planted some climbing vines that have gotten very well integrated into the railings, and I don't want to harm the plants. So it's a combination home improvement hort day question, but is there any way for me to treat the wood and protect it without harming the plants?
You know, there. Yeah, I know that there's some organic. I was just reading about this a couple weeks ago. My internet's down, been down for the last 2 days, so otherwise I'd try to find something here to break. But there are some organic treatments of stains, and you know, some people just use, it's more of a natural mineral like ochre, things like that, to treat the wood. So, you know, I would just kind of Google, if I was looking for, you know, organic wood treatments, and yeah, because I would really be nervous too that it may damage it. But it's surprising how resilient these plants are. I had to clean off brick patio one time, and we had to use kind of a derivative of muriatic acid, and we're washing it off, and it's, you know, kind of going on the edge of the soil, and it didn't seem to bother the grass or bushes at all. I was pretty nervous about it, but I would try to find just an organic wood treatment. And it also depends too, is if this is the a newer wood deck, because it would have copper as the active, treatment in it, as opposed to the older wood decks had, not asbestos, arsenic, as its active ingredient. So, you know, you may want to take a chunk of it and send it in. And if you're not in a big rush, you can send a piece to the Wood Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin. And it's a government-run facility, and they can tell you everything you want to know about treating that particular wood with something that won't hurt plants. In fact, you could probably just give them a call sometime or email them and ask them what type of product could they use. They just know everything about wood and its treatment.
All right.
So it's the Wood Products Laboratory in Madison, Wisconsin, at the University of Wisconsin.
All right. Let's go back to the phones. Sue is on the line in Fairfield. Hi, Sue.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
I'm recently, I'm going to be buying a small cabin that sits very low to the ground, and I know I'm going to have to replace a few of the perimeter posts of the foundation, and I don't know how to do that. I can't afford to jack the whole thing up. What do I do?
Well, you mean it? The cabin is sitting on posts, on piers, basically?
Yes, it's old. It's very old. Mm-hmm.
Is it sitting on the ground? The whole cabin is right on the ground then, or is it up in the air?
No, a bit of it's up just somewhat, but one corner is, maybe it's right on the ground. I can't see it yet because the floors are still on it, but I know there's going to be rot under there.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing, is when the wood starts getting wet, it will just kind of keep moving right along. And so the nice thing about a cabin usually is you can excavate, and I know you don't want to hear this, but you can excavate underneath maybe, 6 or 8 feet of it, and it's not going to come down like a house would normally. It depends on how it was structured. But you are going to have to replace any wood that's wet if you want this thing to be usable down the road. The other thing is, it's in some cases, they aren't that, if it isn't that large, there are some people that can, lift it up at a little bit at a time just by going around it, like corkscrew around it, lifting it up a couple inches at a time and putting some brick or concrete block to get it up in the air a little ways, and then change the wood out from there. But that's the bad thing about cabins. We should never have them on the ground. I have a small one up in northern Minnesota, and I've got it about 2.5 feet off the ground. because I want air to get to it and you know, keep the moisture away. But you are going to have, if you want to keep the cabin, you are going to have to replace anything that's wet. You know, that's the bad thing. And you might want to, you know, try to find some white oak to replace those logs with. And Iowa has a lot of white oak. You can usually get a hold of someone maybe at a sawmill, and they can find some for you.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for your call, Sue.
Sorry.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. You can also email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Mike is on the line next. Hello, Mike.
Yes.
Hi. What's your question?
Just a comment, really. In the 70s, I rented a farmhouse, Iowa farmhouse. And in the winter, when it got really cold, well, we would just turn the kitchen faucet on. That was the real problematic faucet that froze, and let the water run all night. Or worst case scenario, we went down the basement and turned the water off and opened a valve and basically emptied the pipe so they wouldn't freeze.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are still doing those things, and that's a great thing to do to prevent a problem that you see coming at you, Bill, but that's not necessarily a long-term solution, right?
No, but, you know, he's got, you know, it's a point. It's basically what you're doing is you're winterizing your home. And what Mike just, you know, kind of alluded to, if you're going to go down in the basement and drain your pipes out, is it would be kind of handy, you know, you have to open all the faucets, open all of them to let, you know, the water go down. Well, in some cases there might be water in some areas that maybe went up and down and over, is to have a small air compressor and, you know, turn the air pressure down, you know, pretty low, but just to be able to blow some air into the pipes to maybe force the rest of any water that may be sitting in a low spot or something out. But you know, if it's an old farmhouse like that, you're just treating it like a, basically, if you're, you know, you have a cabin somewhere and you're going to winterize it, you know, not come back till spring, that's what you would do, is exactly what he did.
Well, and if you do have a little bit of water left in pipes after doing that, there's room for it to expand. So it may take longer to thaw, but that's not going to damage the pipe, is it?
Well, in some cases it will.
Okay.
With copper, you know, copper, and then you have the old steel. And you know, at some of the, especially the old farmhouses, you know, where we had old steel and then you had the farm water that looked just like, well, young people don't know what tang looked like, but basically like so much iron in the water that you've got, you know, maybe a 3/4-inch pipe and you've got the actual inside diameters about the size of a pencil because of all of it build up inside. And so you would think that, okay, it's going to expand and it's going to go, you know, either way, left and right instead of outwards. But in some cases, the two ends will freeze, and then it'll just pop the pipe. So, yeah, it's just, you know, you sometimes are just going to have an issue with an older home, and so that's why we want to keep it in as far as we can. And turning, and you know, so I know some people went ahead and bought these propane and kerosene heaters and all this and aimed flames towards them. For one thing, you could start a fire. And the other thing is, you know, in some cases, when you have a heavy frost, it actually makes things a lot tighter than what your house may be used to. And you can, you know, you're looking at carbon monoxide. You're looking at all these, you know, pollutants inside the house, too, and maybe sucking up a lot of the oxygen. So it's an issue, you know, because even in Iowa, some of our vent pipes going out the roof were freezing shut, and then people were saying, you know, I can smell sewer gas and I can smell all these different fumes. It's because it was so cold for so long and we were seeing things that you know, we would normally see. But you know, if you're going to have a problem, that's a, you know, what Mike brought up, that's I like the draining rather than just letting the water run myself, but because then that water ends up going down into a drain when the drain might freeze,
right?
You know, in an elbow. So just that's the issue, too, is you have to get the water out of the drains as well.
All right, let's.
It's just a nightmare. You know, you can't say anything good about it.
we can start this question before the break. We may have to come back to it, but this is someone who says, "I have a dryer exhaust that goes up the sidewall of the top floor and vents to the north side of the house. We had water drain back down on the pipe. I'm assuming it was due to ice forming from condensation and end up coming through the bathroom vent in the room next to the laundry room. Should I have that evaluated by a plumber or an HVAC person? And secondly, should I see about having the vent repositioned?"
Have that thing repositioned. They're not supposed to usually go that far anyway. And when they go upwards instead of horizontal, that makes it even worse. It just becomes a chimney. And those pipes aren't made to have to act like a chimney. I would have that looked at and have a lot shorter run, because it's actually not even really be able to do much for drying. I'm surprised that it even dries much, because it has to push the air and the moisture so far.
All right,
along
so
with the
that's
wind.
One of those so things where you're gonna have more problems in the future from the very same thing. So have that vent move.
You are.
We are gonna take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. Our home improvement expert Bill McAnally is here today. You can call 866-780-9100. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Our home improvement expert, Bill McAnally, is here today to answer your questions. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to the phones now. We've got a number of people waiting. Dennis is on the line, I think, in Clive. Hello, Dennis.
Good morning.
Hi, what's your question?
Well, December of 2019, we moved into a new home in the Clive area, and around February, lots of cracks started to appear in the cement by the front door. The contractor said they were too small to fix under the warranty, so we then went to a cement refinisher who did a wonderful job refinishing the steps with a nice pattern, or the concrete rather than the steps, and now, several months later, we have huge, even bigger cracks in the concrete in the same spot, as well as additional spots. So we're sort of trapped. The refinisher said it was the contractor's problem because of drainage. The contractor says the cracks are too small. What we're really looking for is, what's the road ahead? Is there a person we could have inspected to tell us how to fix the problem? Or right now it's a bit of a danger because people can trip over the cracks because they're so large.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, if you can trip over them, that is an issue. A lot of times, now, is this the actual sidewalk then, I guess, to get it straight in my head, that's coming up to your front entry? And now what I've seen in the past is usually when that happens, it's just what the preparation for the sidewalk. And, if you just throw loose dirt, and then run a skid loader over top of it or something like that, that really doesn't, compact it enough to keep it from cracking like that. So, usually they want, if you do a little bit of research, sometimes they'll say they want like 4 to 6 inches of clean gravel underneath the sidewalk, and packed down, all compacted soil, so it doesn't move up and down. Now, some contractors will put reinforcement rod in the cement so that when it cracks, because it always cracks, at least it won't go up and down, separate at the cracks. And then if sometimes they'll put wire mesh, which is 6-inch by 6-inch grid of No. 9 wire, but that usually just is laying on top of of the ground or the sand, underneath the cement. So when it comes down to when you have two different contractors arguing, usually the best thing to do is get a hold of the Iowa Ready Mix Association. And they can give you information of how it should have been prepped. And you can get a hold of, maybe the original bills saying what the strength of the concrete was, how hot the day was. There are a lot of conditions affect the strength and the performance. But if you have if someone can trip over it, it needs to be replaced. We just worked on a project last year where we had the contractor came in, cut out the bad section, and did compact the soil and poured new concrete in there, because it's basically going to come back against the contractor if someone does, you know, get hurt because they refuse to fix it. So, you know, and before it to crack, you know, for it to crack, something had to be done to cause it to crack. I mean, concrete cracks, yes, but to go up and down, that's something that was something underneath it, underneath the concrete, something moving, and that should have been eliminated in the process of putting the sidewalk in.
There was a bit of a drainage problem, too. They installed a French drain to supposedly correct that.
You know, and that's it, too. But, you know, that's where, you know, like when we were at Iowa Central, all the sidewalks we put in, we had 6 to 8 inches of clean limestone underneath it. All compacted, leveled out, so that any water was there could drain away. So, you know, it still may be getting underneath the sidewalk and not getting to the French drain in time, or it may be an issue, but, you know, having rock underneath it helps drain to the French drain, and so it won't heave up. But, yeah, the Iowa Ready-Mix Association is a really good group, and they can probably help you. If not the local building inspector, just have them stop out and say, hey, you know, what's the deal? Because
thank you very much.
No problem. Yep, I could go on forever on this topic. That's get a hold of them.
All right, maybe next month, Bill.
yeah.
All right, here's
that's
a question. A question from Janet. She says, we live in Stanhope, just northwest of Ames, but we also have a home in Texas. And during the big freeze 2 weeks ago, we had pipes freeze and burst. When the plumbers went in to repair them, the two initially burst pipes turned into 14 holes in pipes. My question is, at this point, that indicates to me that the metal in the pipes has become very weak. Do you think that the whole house should be replumbed? Do you recommend traditional plumbing for that, or PEX, which that's supposed to be more resilient, right?
It's supposed to be. You know, in Texas is, you know, completely different from us, and I don't know what kind of pipes, you know, they had before, because when I've seen small, you know, like pinholes in it, a lot of times it's because there's a recirculation pump going, and if your water has a lot of say minerals in it, it actually wears through the pipe and causes them some pinholes. But you know, if it was me, you know, I would replace pretty much everything that you can get to, and especially in Texas, PEX is a good alternative down there. It just depends on what the, you know, the plumbing and the contractor's situation is. You know, when you're away, you know, this far away from Texas, a lot of times it's hard to find somebody that you can really feel comfortable with. So, you know, if you have a lot of friends down there, I would start asking all of them, you know, who is the most reputable contractor that you can think of. And there again, I would go to your area down there and go to the building official's office, because they'll have a list of all the plumbers and the license, you know, they're licensed down there, and find out, you know, who's insured, who's licensed and things like that. But I would go on, you know, find out in the area who the neighbors down there would recommend. But I would just replace it. So, I mean, it depends how old it is, but, you know, that's probably what I would do. I'd feel a lot safer when I'm up here and, you know, Stanhope, and don't have to worry about it.
Right. All right, let's go back to the
phone.
You
know, the other thing.
Oh, sorry, go on.
Okay, I was going to say the other thing about PEX is, what's really nice is, you know, they have all the different shutoffs for each circuit. So it's not like shutting your whole house off. You can just shut individual circuits off if you are nervous about something. Anyway.
All right, let's get back to the phones. Ron is on the line in Waterloo. Hi, Ron.
Hi. I moved here about 2 years ago. We got a master bedroom in the basement, and I've got a radon, electronic radon detector, and it's reading like in January about 8, and February 6, and now about 5.5. I wonder about radon mitigation. Is it real noisy? Because can you turn it off if you're trying to sleep at night in the basement? Is it necessary?
Well, you know, you could put it over. Is like say in your case, where is, do you have a sump pump in your basement?
You have a,
you know,
a slab,
a sump,
basement,
a sump pump. Oh, you have a slab. Okay. Oh, okay. Well, you can put it anywhere, you know, you can put it somewhere off to, maybe away from where your bedroom is, but also a lot of the systems mount the fan on the outside of the house. And so that you don't have any noise on the inside. So, you know, just get with a radon mitigation, service and you could tell them I'm really sensitive to the noise and they can work the whole system. Some even put them in the attics, the actual fan itself. And so, no, you wouldn't hear it if it's put on the outside or up in the attic. And now if it was right next to you, you just hear, you know, or right on the other side of the wall, you just hear a humming noise. You know, they're not very loud fan. They're not like, you know, usually when a furnace kicks on or something, they're not any more near that, but yeah, your mitigation person can help you on it.
Okay. It's like eight. I know four is supposed to be the limit. Is that the...
You know, since it's a bedroom, I would do something about it. You know, four is the, you know, 4 picocuries per liter is the, you know, the official EPA limit, but when you're in a bedroom, you're spending a lot of time in there. I would go ahead and do that. There's other good things about a radon system is it pulls also besides pulling the radon gas, it pulls moisture vapor and it usually helps dry down a house or a basement as well. So it makes everything healthier. I mean, it's actually, I think that's almost as much or more of an issue than the radon is getting that excess moisture off from underneath the slab.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, Ron. And next up, let's go to Tom in Keokuk. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi, what's your question?
Yes, I live in a 1925 colonial two-story home. It does not have insulation in the exterior walls. What is the best type of insulation to use? I was thinking of either having it blown in from the outside or like a closed cell.
Well, I guess the thing is the outside of the house going to need siding in, you know, new windows, things
wood,
like that?
I have
in
wood
the near
lap
future?
Siding.
Okay, so do you want to keep that the look of that?
I talked to a contractor several years ago, and they said that they could temporarily remove one length of siding and blow it in that way, and then put back the strip that they took out.
There's a lot of different products out there. You know, there's the foams that you can spray in. There's a cellulose, you know, recycled wood fiber or paper that can be blown in. The big key is, you know, that vintage of home is you just have to make sure that whoever is putting it in has done a lot of it and is inspecting it with an infrared camera to make sure that the cavities are getting full. There are some companies that spray foam and they just go ahead and blow it for a little bit and then move on to the next cavity. And then some of us have played tricks and pulled off the inside of the wall to actually see how much foam is actually in the wall. And maybe half of the cavity was full. So, you know, there has to be a good verification that the cavities are being put in. There are some new flowable type, cementitious type insulations that they will, it's put in just like blowing it and it fills the whole cavity up. You're kind of lucky the technology has really moved along here on insulating exterior walls. The best thing to do is to cover the whole outside of the house, but you want to keep, you know, the look. So, you know, find a reputable company that's been around for at least 10 years, maybe 15 years, and go with them. There's some really good ones, you know, in, like say in the Ames area that I know, that will know exactly what to put in. They verify how much they put it in at the right amount of pressure so that you don't blow any, you know, plaster or ruin anything. The downside, though, is it's illegal to insulate those outside walls if the electrical in it is the old knob and tube. So
okay, that's what I
if
have.
The old, oh, yeah, well, that's the bad thing. Then the only thing you can do then is you have to physically put a barrier around the old knob and tube wiring and insulate around it. It insulation cannot come in contact, and a lot of people go ahead and spray that, but that is the biggest issue. I mean, it's you talk to an electrical inspector down at the state, and their face just turns bright red when you say, yeah, I caught them insulating around the old bobbin tube wiring. And I tell you what, if you ever had a fire in the house, the insurance company saw you insulated around it, you know, you're pretty much done. So yeah, you're gonna have to either physically, you know, go in and put something around the wiring so the insulation can't get to it, or rewire the outside walls. And then, you know, then you're almost, well, I'm going to pull off the inside finish and insulate there. That's the only downside about an older home. And that's why a lot of them are insulating the outside and putting new siding. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. But you lose the look. Unless you want to put basically the same kind of siding on the outside. But yeah, I'm glad we talked about the electrical, because that, you know, I would hate to see you insulated and then have an issue, you know, have a fire.
Well, that's something I hadn't even thought about, to be honest.
Yeah, that's really scary. And you know, and guys, I'm in my 60s, and so, you know, we used to insulate up in the attics over it all the time. We didn't, you know, and we were told by the insulation industry, oh, it doesn't hurt it. Well, then we learned that, oh man, you know, you're really doing things wrong back then.
Well, Tom, be safe, and thanks so much for calling. Yep. And we'll try to squeeze in one more question here. This is from Donna. And very quickly, after the last snowstorm 9 days ago, I noticed that ice covered the siding on the east side of my house. Since there's a small overhang with gutters, I'm questioning whether I had an ice jam and the gutters backed up, or if this is a ventilation problem. One solution mentioned was heat tape in the gutters. I have not heard of that, Bill. What do you think?
I don't really like heat tapes in the gutters. You want to go back to finding what the cause is. The gutters, you know, the gutters are just an extension of the roof. They don't have anything with causing ice dams. And it's not attic ventilation either. That's usually what they'll say, oh, you need more attic ventilation. No, you have to stop the warm air from getting into the attic. And in that section where she's mentioning, there may be more heat loss from a fan or air leakage going up in the attic and melting. Melting the roof and causing that ice dam. So someone needs to get up there and see why there's warm air getting up into the attic and causing condensation. And I've seen it come out of the siding like she has, and it come down right over the face of the window. And it just happened to be a light fixture that was close to the outside wall. It was a can light and no insulation above it. And warm air was going up through the can light, hitting the roof deck, and then condensing and then melding and then coming right down the outside of the window.
All right. So keep the heat tape out of the gutters and figure out what's going on. Bill McAnally, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Charity. We'll hopefully talk to you next month.
Yeah, absolutely. And Bill, I know you mentioned your mom's listening. Emily, I've been thinking of you, sending love your way. So many warm wishes, and I hope you all have a lovely spring together. And Bill, we will talk soon. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe.